Let's go ahead and open up to the book of Genesis. Yeah, a number of people are welcome back. Judy's back after a little bit of an absence. And if you see Denny and Kathy and notice their nice tan, it's not fake. It's real. They've been in Hawaii for a couple of months helping kids move and stuff. So that's good to see. Good to have Platts here. So welcome, everybody. I thought it was kind of funny that so many people that haven't been here for a while make it on Daylight Savings Day. You know, we have notes all over our house, change the clock, because we still have manual clocks, so if I don't do it, we don't get up, and that's not good on when you're teaching. So, well, yeah, we'll open up to Genesis chapter 21 is where we'll be today. Just a reminder, Genesis chapter 12 through 25 focuses on the patriarch Abraham and God's covenant relationship with him, and that covenant is foundational to God's work among mankind. Okay, this is the foundational covenant and agreement in Scripture, and it really shapes the rest of Scripture and the rest of history. So we're dealing with real fundamental issue here as we go through the life of Abraham. And we've seen an unfolding of the covenant promises as we've been walking through Genesis. Okay, Genesis chapter 12, we had the initial promise of land, seed, and blessing. And then in chapter 13, we saw the eternality of the covenant. It will go on forever. And we saw the reaffirmation of the land and seed promises in chapter 13. And then in Genesis 15, we had the covenant formalized in the ratification ceremony. And then in chapter 17, we had the sign of the covenant given, circumcision. And then in Genesis 18, we were given a little bit of a timetable regarding the covenant that Sarah will bear a son within a year. So kind of just this unfolding of the covenant as we've walked through Genesis. Now in Genesis chapter 21, again, a key chapter, it's going to focus on the birth and preeminence of Isaac, the covenant heir. And we'll see Isaac's name used three or six times in this section, and then plus some wordplay with his name three different times. So again, he's the focus as we come into chapter 21. So I put the outline up on the board, but yeah, the first seven, not board, but screen, I guess it is. But we'll deal with the birth of Isaac, and then the exile of Hagar and Ishmael, and then God's care for Hagar and Ishmael. And then we'll pick up next week with Abraham's covenant with Abimelech. So let's go ahead and start with verse 1. Now Yahweh visited Sarah as he had said, and Yahweh did for Sarah as he had promised. So Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the appointed time of which God had spoken to him. So here that word visited, if you have New American Standard, it says took note of, and it's also translated, was gracious to. And so the word visited points to, often describes divine intervention. God comes to do something. And usually it's used in this, I was looking through this word, looking at this word a little closer, it's usually used in the context of punishment. When God, that's usually how it's translated. That word is usually translated punishment. So when God comes to visit for mankind, usually it's bad. But on occasion, it's also a good thing for the purpose of blessing someone. And that's how it's used here. When we get to Genesis chapter 50, verse 24 and 25, we'll see this particular word used in a positive blessing way as well. It'll be translated, God will surely take care of you. Dying Joseph is talking to his brothers. And he says, God will surely take care. That surely take care is the same word we have translated, visited here. And then in Ruth chapter 1, verse 6, well, you know, when Jesse went through the book of Ruth, we have Ruth and her widowed daughters-in-law. They leave Moab for Israel because they heard that Yahweh had visited his people to give them food. She left because of a famine, and she goes to Moab, then she comes back because God had visited and blessed the nation with food. So here, this visitation from Yahweh is for the purpose of blessing. And after 25 years of waiting, 25 years since chapter 12, when the heir was promised, God fulfills his promise of an heir that's going to be born to Abraham and Sarah. And then it's clear, very clear, that the line of blessing promised to Abraham would come through Sarah and no one else. And back in chapter 17, we saw that promise made. Remember that as we've gone through time, that Abraham and Sarah have thought, oh, we're getting so old, there's no way that the heir can actually come bodily through us. So at first they thought that they would adopt someone, Eleazar of Damascus. We talked about that earlier. And then God is like, no, this child, this heir is going to come through your physical body. So then they're like, okay, well, maybe it's going to come through Sarah's maid, Hagar, since Sarah is getting so old. So they take things into their own hand, and Abraham has relations with Hagar and has a baby Ishmael, but then God makes it very clear, no, the blessing is not going to come through Ishmael. The blessing is going to come from an heir that's born to Abraham and Sarah. So again, that's what we have happening now in chapter 21. And the birth happens at the appointed time, back in chapter 18, verse 10 through 14. Abraham, or God, visited and said it's going to happen within the year. So that's what we have happen now in chapter 21. Isaac is indeed born within a year's time. So verse 3, and Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Then Abraham circumcised his son Isaac when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. So we see Abraham's obedience here. Again, the divinely appointed name of Isaac was given back in chapter 17, verse 19. And we talked about the name Isaac back there. And it literally means, he laughs. So that word Isaac comes from the word to laugh. And that served as an ongoing reminder when God told Abraham and Sarah that they were going to have a child together, a son together, what do they do? You know, back in chapter 17, verse 17, Abraham laughed. So and then in chapter 18, verse 12, Sarah laughed. So it's kind of an ongoing, oh yeah, we did laugh and had some doubts when God told us this. But again, an ongoing reminder that nothing is too difficult for Yahweh. We saw that back in chapter 18, verse 14. Nothing is too difficult for God. If he says you're going to have a child, it doesn't matter if you're 30, 80, 90, 150, you're going to have a child because God can miraculously bring these things to pass. So again, I love the name of the child. Just a constant reminder of the parents' initial reaction to the revelation. And then also too in verse 3, really stresses the identity and significance of the birth mother. Again, this baby is coming through Sarah. Abraham called the name of the son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore to him, Isaac. Okay, it's not Ishmael or any other son. Abraham, after the death of Sarah, is going to remarry in the future and have additional sons. So it's not any of those sons. It's not Ishmael who he already had. It's through the one son that came through Sarah, which is Isaac. And then in verse 4, in accordance with the covenant agreement, he circumcises Isaac when he's 8 days old. And that was established back in chapter 17, verse 12. So again, Abraham's faithfulness and obedience emphasized here. Verse 5. Now Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. So again, a reminder of the parents' advanced age. Back in chapter 18, verse 11, we're told that Sarah was past childbearing age. Okay, so she was beyond the age when people in that day gave birth. We talked a little bit about how, you know, before the flood, people lived centuries. The average age was 900 or something like that. And people had babies, you know, the childbearing window was much bigger. But then after the flood, that started narrowing. By the time we get to Abraham and Sarah, it's getting closer to what we would accept as normal in our day. And so Sarah at 90 was beyond childbearing, we're told very clearly in the earlier chapter. So Abraham's 100 and Sarah's 90. We know that from Genesis chapter 17, verse 17. Verse 6, and Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. So again, this joy and happiness of Sarah and those around her at this, you know, miraculous, blessed event, the birth of this baby. And Sarah's doubting laughter from earlier, back in chapter 18, is now turned into joyous laughter and joyous faith. And here's where we see some word plays on that name, Isaac. Again, Isaac comes from the word to laugh. So Isaac, and when it talks about in verse 6, you know, laughter and laugh, that would sound just like the name Isaac. So we have a word play there that we don't pick up in English, but that's clearly there when we read it in Hebrew. And also, too, in verse 6, that word hears. Some would hold that that was maybe a jab at Hagar. We're going to see the tension between Hagar and Sarah here pretty shortly. But if you remember from back in chapter 16, verse 11, the root word for Ishmael, again, Abraham's son through Hagar, the maid, the slave, the root word comes from to hear. So Isaac means to laugh. Ishmael means God hears. And so when you use the word hears there, it could be a jab at Hagar, because those two words would sound very similar as well. When she said, God has made laughter for, and everyone who hears, you know, that would sound just like Ishmael. I don't know why I did this, but I think it's the jaw movement. But it sounds like the name Ishmael. He had this joy and happiness. I was talking with Cheryl earlier, and you know, our daughter, 41, had a baby in December. And we go down and visit, and it's just so fun to watch the, you know, even at an older age, just the joy that a mother has when a new baby is there. It's just like you end up wanting to tell your daughter that's 41 that you are so cute, but we don't dare say that. Hopefully she won't listen to this message. But, you know, who's cuter, the baby or the mom? But it's just that joy that surrounds the birth of a baby, and particularly from the mother's perspective, just that internal maternal instinct just bursts forth so clear. And that's what we have happening here in verse 6 and then on into verse 7. Again, just that miracle. We've born a child with Abraham, even at this advanced age. Okay, now the tone's going to change a little bit as we get into verse 8 and following. We're going to see conflict and separation. So verse 8, and the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day that Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing in jest. So, note from one commentator, children were weaned closer to the age of 2 or 3 in the ancient world. Because infant mortality was high, if an infant grew to this stage, it was fairly certain that he or she would live. So such an event called for a celebration, especially for parents who had waited so long for a child. So high infant mortality, they get through those first 2 or 3 years, and then chances are they're going to survive and live longer. So that would be one reason for having this great celebration at that point when the child was weaned. So this great party's going on, and Ishmael is there, and Sarah sees him laughing in jest, is how the LSB translation phrases it. If you have NASB, it's mocking. So he's laughing in jest, he's mocking. We saw that same word used back in chapter 19, verse 14, when Lot went to his sons-in-law and said, we need to get out of Sodom because it's going to be destroyed. And they thought he was jesting. So the same word used back there. The basic word is really the word to laugh, but it's an intensive form, the particular grammatical structure of this word in Hebrew used here and back in chapter 19, takes it beyond just simple laughing, but more to the idea of ridicule. And we'll see the word used again in Genesis chapter 39, where Potiphar's wife accuses Joseph of, you know, in NASB, of making sport of her. And that's the same laughing with this intensive form. It's the, again, the idea of ridiculing and insulting and scoffing. So the idea here is that, you know, it's not just like Ishmael was standing back and just did this little laugh. He's basically ridiculing the toddler in his name at this celebration. And you got to stop and think from Ishmael's perspective. He's about 14 here, or 14, 16, 17, somewhere in there. But he's aware of the impact that Isaac's birth is going to have on him. Because before that, he was the only son of Abraham. And Abraham is a man of great wealth and prestige. And so he was like in line to be the heir. He's the oldest son, Ishmael is, but he's not going to be the chosen. He's not the chosen heir. That's going to be Isaac. So Ishmael in a little bit of an awkward situation here. Okay, so verse 10. Therefore, she said to Abraham, Sarah said to Abraham, drive out this maidservant and her son. The son of this maidservant will not be an heir with my son, with Isaac. So we have this long-standing tension between Sarah and Hagar, and it boils over. Turn back to Genesis chapter 16. This is where Sarai at the time, and Abram, they come up with this bright idea of, there's no heir yet, and Sarah's getting old, so maybe we'll have the heir through my Egyptian maidservant, my Egyptian slave, Hagar. And so Hagar is impregnated. And we go down to verse 3. So, and after Abram had lived 10 years in the land of Canaan, Abram's wife Sarai took Hagar the Egyptian, her servant woman, and gave her to her husband Abram as his wife. So he went into Hagar, and she conceived. When she saw that she had conceived, so her mistress became contemptible in her sight. So that's the view of Hagar towards Sarai here before the renaming. She's contemptible. Okay, and then we go down, and Abram tells, Sarah approaches Abram, we've got this problem. And down in verse 6, Abram said to Sarah, behold, your servant woman Hagar, she's in your hand. Do to her what is good in your sight. So Sarai afflicted her, and she fled from her presence. So you remember, they're treating each other very badly. Their attitudes towards each other and actions towards each other have been bad all this time. And now all of a sudden, this new baby comes on the scene, and Sarah sees Ishmael, kind of her stepson, I suppose, maybe in a way, ridiculing the new baby, Isaac. And she says in verse 10, you've got to drive her out. She has to go. That's the only solution, is to get rid of her. And that word drive out is a very strong word. I mean, you've got to get her out of here. It's the same word that we saw back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 24, where God drove Adam out of the garden after the fall, after the sin. And it's the same word in Genesis chapter 4, verse 14, where Cain was driven from the land to become a wanderer in judgment because of after his murder of his brother Abel. So this is a very strong word, just like throwing Adam out of the garden and throwing Cain out of God's presence to be a wanderer. Sarah is, you've got to get her out of here, her and her son. And again, Sarah's fear may not be, or her main beef may not be that he was playing around, that Ishmael was playing around, but she's thinking towards the future as well, and wants to make sure that there's no contested claim to be the heir, and you get Ishmael out of there will help with that problem. Also, too, here, the repeats twice that this is your maidservant. I'm your wife, and I say, get her out. And this pressure on, kind of building pressure on Abraham and what he needs to do. In the end of verse 10, the son of this maidservant shall not be an heir with my son, with Isaac. Like one translation, he will never share in the inheritance with my son. And that's a true statement. God's clear that the promise, line of promise is through Isaac alone. And so verse 11, and the matter distressed Abraham greatly because of his son. So that word distressed was very displeasing. That word carries the idea of being evil or bad. So I think that what it does is it speaks to the extent of the pain Abraham experienced. This is terrible. In Abraham's view, because he loves his son. This is his mid-teen age son, and he loves him. And all of a sudden, he's got to go, be driven out, which means complete separation. And so he's very moved and you know, upset by this, by what is going to happen. And again, he's a victim of his own actions. He's essentially a polygamist, and the end result of that is bad things happening. And we'll talk a little bit more about polygamy when we get to Joseph, because Joseph has a number of wives in later on. So verse 12. So God said to Abraham, so God comes on the scene here and speaks to Abraham, "Do not be distressed because of the boy and your maidservant. Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her voice. For through Isaac, your seed will be named. And of the son of the maidservant, I will make a nation also, because he is your seed." So here, God comes on the scene and says, do what your wife says. Okay, this is the right way, to the right move. This is the thing you should do. And in Galatians chapter 4, verse 30, we won't go there, but Paul quotes from Genesis chapter 21, verse 10, when he's contrasting the Mosaic covenant based on works with the Abrahamic covenant based on grace. And Hagar and Ishmael represent the Mosaic covenant. You know, in the New Testament, the Mosaic covenant is done and is moved. It's expelled. It's been completed. And that's the same picture we have here. You know, the separation is the proper thing to do. And again, it's almost inspired because Paul quotes from Sarah's command in the New Testament. Again, only Isaac and the Jews would be the heir of Abrahamic covenants, land and seed promises, not Ishmael and his descendants. So, and then the word, we're going to see some use of the word boy in verse 12. That particular word boy, the Hebrew word is na'ar. And if you have an NASB translation, it translates it lad. So boy, a lad. It's usually translated young man or young men. It's translated that way 71 times in the Old Testament. But again, it can be kind of a youth, a young man, a boy, depending on the context. When we get to chapter 37, it's going to be used of Joseph when he's age 17. So as we walk through some of the wording here, you almost get the idea that Ishmael is this like a little tiny kid, but he's not a little tiny kid at this point. He's in his mid-teens somewhere. But yeah, here that word boy, that word na'ar, is used in the sense of a young man regarding Isaac. Yeah, I think Abraham was 86 when Ishmael was born. Back in Genesis 16, he was 99 when Ishmael was circumcised, and Ishmael was 13 in Genesis chapter 17. Abraham was 100 when Isaac was born. We just saw that in verse 5 of chapter 21. So when Isaac was born, Ishmael would have been 14, and now 2 or 3 years later, they have the celebration. So yeah, Joseph or Ishmael is going to be around 16 or 17. So he's not like this little tiny kid. He's an older child at this point. But in verse 13, again, God encourages Abraham, you know, don't worry about your son. I am going to bless him. He's going to be blessed and prosper, again, by virtue of his relationship to you. He's not the covenant line. I mean, he's not the promised line, but he's going to be blessed. He's your beloved son, but he's not the son of promise. And when we get to I think it's chapter 25, he's going to become the father of 12 princes. So Ishmael will have 12 sons, kind of in contrast to the 12 sons of Israel. So we'll talk more about Ishmael when we get to chapter 25. So verse 14. So Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar, putting them on her shoulder, and gave her the child and sent her away. So she went and wandered about in the wilderness of Beersheba. So Abraham sent her out. That's a little less harsh word than the drive out that Sarah used back in verse 10. You know, Abraham gives them whatever provisions they could carry and sends them on their way. He sends them out. And again, they can carry a certain number of provisions, but this is a complete separation. Okay, Abraham has got to choose either his wife, Sarah, or his previous mistress, Hagar. So Hagar's got to go, complete separation. Abraham has to trust God to make good on his assurance for Ishmael. Remember, God has said he's going to be blessed. And so Abraham can take confidence in that promise. So here the word child, the Greek word is yeled, and it's translated, if you have NASB, it's translated boy. So there's some interchangeable, seemingly interchangeable uses for the title of Ishmael. We have him called boy in verse 12, and the Hebrew word na'ar, translated lad in NASB. And then now we're talking about a child as we get into verse 14 and following. When we're talking in the context of Hagar, we're using that word child, or NASB's boy, the Hebrew word yeled. And that would be more of an emotional, it kind of emphasizes her emotional attachment. This is like my little boy. You know, you might say that you have a 17-year-old, they're a teen, they're almost a man, but he's my little boy. You know, that's the picture here, is Hagar is just very emotionally attached. When God's talking about it, God uses that other word, na'ar, and we'll see that when we get to verse 17. But when God is referencing Ishmael, he uses the word boy, or the NASB lad, na'ar, which carries more the idea of a young man who's going to develop and is on the verge of moving forward in his life. So again, Hagar, my little boy, you know, God, a young man who has a purpose coming up. So again, yeah, you want to be careful not to think of Ishmael, because when you first read through it, that can kind of enter your thinking. He's not this little tiny kid. He's a 17-year-old young man who has a destiny set by God, but Hagar is still just kind of her little boy in a way. So Abraham rose early in the morning, took bread, gave them their provisions in verse 14, and sends them off. And so they go to this kind of to the south and to the west into the wilderness of Beersheba. We're probably talking 20, 30, 40 miles somewhere in that range, which when you're walking is a long ways. Driving, no big deal. Bicycle, that would be a challenge, but I could do it maybe. But walking, yeah, forget it. You know, it's like walking from here to Omaha. It's my thumb would be up like this very fast. Excuse me. Okay, so yeah, headed south into the desert area. So verse 15. When the water in the skin was finished, she put the child, the yeled, under one of the bushes. Then she went and sat down opposite him about a bow shot away, for she said, "Do not let me see when the child, you know, the yeled, dies." And she sat opposite him and lifted up her voice and wept. So again, these meager provisions that they could carry run out, and Ishmael apparently becomes so weak and dehydrated that Hagar has to leave him in the shade of this shrub. She puts him there. You know, again, he's not a little boy, he's a young man. She kind of escorts him there. Again, he's weak from dehydration or whatever, and he lays down. It's interesting that word put actually means to throw, fling, or cast. It's, again, the idea of Hagar. From her perspective, she basically had to cast him away, and then she goes, you know, a bow shot away, looking up how far can you shoot a bow, you know, a bow and arrow, and it's maybe 400 yards. So she goes off. She just can't bear the thought of watching this, you know, her child die from exposure. So she goes away and moves away, and just the turmoil and agony that she's going through, and her fear for her son and the anguish that she's in at this point. So she's off then weeping. So verse 17, then God heard the voice of the boy crying. So we go from, you know, talking about child in verse 14, 15, and 16. Now we go back to talking about boy like we had back in verse 12. Then God heard the voice of the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, "What is the matter with you, Hagar? Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the boy where he is. Arise, lift up the boy, and hold him by the hand, for I will make a great nation of him." Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. And she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. So again, the boy, from God's perspective, this is a young man who's going to grow into a nation and be blessed. And the angel of God, probably the same as the angel of Yahweh, Jesus Christ speaks to her and tells her, you know, don't worry. Ishmael, God hears. He's going that, remember, Ishmael, the name means God hears. The combination of the word for God and to hear, his God-given name back in chapter 16. So we see God's mercy and grace at work here as he hears and responds to the prayers with this miraculous provision. You know, there's this oasis there. It's a place to get a drink. So, and again, there's assurance that Ishmael would be made into a great nation as promised. Remember, God made this promise back in chapter 16 to Hagar. Told Hagar back in chapter 16 that Ishmael would be blessed, that he would become that her seed would become a great nation. And then he said the same thing to Abraham back in chapter 17. So again, God is guaranteeing the survival of Ishmael. And then verse 20, excuse me. And God was with the boy, and he grew, and he lived in the wilderness and was an archer. And he lived in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So again, God was with Ishmael. He's faithful to his promises to this boy. And again, we'll get into his genealogy when we get to chapter 25. But they settle here in the wilderness of Paran. So it's going to be further south from Beersheba. I'm going to work on a map maybe we can hand out that'll have kind of these key sites that we've talked about in Genesis, but probably about another 100 miles. So they keep going south. Take them a little while to get that far. But again, God providing along the way. And it's close to Egypt. So where does, you know, Hagar is from Egypt. And she finds a wife for Ishmael among the Egyptians. And the site Paran, or Paran, becomes significant during the Exodus in Numbers chapter 10 and 13, and as well as in the days of David. We see events going on in the area of Paran in 1 Samuel chapter 25. So if you're in kind of a deserty area, you're not growing crops, you know, what are the key things you need to be able to do? You need to be able to hunt. So he becomes an archer. I like the way ESV puts it. The ESV translation says an expert with the bow. So again, this wilderness survival, hunting for food and also for defense. You know, other marauding people around, you need to be able to defend yourself. You need to be able to eat. So again, we see here, Ishmael, you know, no father to help him along, but he's under God's care. And this is going to be the last that we see of Hagar. She's going to be mentioned in Genesis chapter 25 as the mother of Ishmael. And then, of course, we saw how she's talked about, referenced in Galatians chapter 4 by Paul when he's talking about the Mosaic versus the Abrahamic covenant. But the last we see of Hagar. So we'll go ahead and stop there. Next week, we'll finish out chapter 21. Looking at Abraham's covenant with the Philistinian king, Abimelech. And then we'll go on into chapter 22, where we see the sacrifice of Isaac. Again, kind of that ultimate display of faith and trust.